From MyDomain.com, this is Second Life, a podcast spotlighting women who have truly inspiring careers. We're talking about their work journeys, what they've learned from the process of setting aside their doubts or fears, and what happens when they embark on their second life. Today, we have someone who is not only incredibly inspirational, but also someone who you have been asking for since we launched this podcast. Celebrated actress, author, and the founder of The Honest Company, Jessica Alba. As you probably know, Jessica has been a working actress since the age of 13, when she got her first part in a movie called Camp Nowhere, before going on to movies like Never Been Kissed, Sin City, and Fantastic Four. In addition to having a thriving career as an actress, she somehow found time to start The Honest Company, a mission-driven consumer goods company she launched in 2011, which is now valued at over $1 billion. Jessica has built this incredible career in two different industries. She just shot a pilot, she just had her third baby, and I legitimately have no idea how she has the energy and hustle to do so many different things, but hopefully she'll share some of her wisdom with us today. This is Jessica Alba on Second Life. Hello, lady.
Hi.
Jessica Alba, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me. This is exciting.
I'm really excited, too. So you're not only an actress, which you have been for the majority of your life, but you also have made this, you're self-made, and you've created this incredible, incredible company that's worth $1 billion, employs all kinds of people, does all kinds of good. The fact that you're doing these two things at the same time is like banana pants crazy to me. But before we get into sort of all of the honest of it all, let's go back to the beginning and talk about your early days. So you started acting. Your first job was when you were about, what, 13?
Mm-hmm. Oh, 12.
12. Okay. So at that age, I literally was concerned with what color rubber bands I was getting on my braces and, like, what I should wear to the homecoming sock hop, and you are working. So how did that happen, and what was that like?
How did that happen? I think from a pretty early age, meaning – since I could remember, I always felt different. And I felt different to my family. I felt different to my peers. I didn't really have friends. I was sick a lot as a kid. So I just lived in my head. And my escape, because I did spend so much time in hospitals from being sick, was my imagination. And all I wanted to be was a superhero or someone powerful or someone in any other situation or someone who was smart enough to cure diseases and make people not sick. Or
you wanted to escape your life.
I wanted to escape my life. And I just felt like really imprisoned in it. And, you know, my parents are wonderful people, and it's not like they did anything wrong. I was just a weird kid, and I was twisted in the brain, in my brain, and I just didn't feel comfortable or right or like I fit anywhere. And I had such a restlessness. And my mom weirdly was an extra on this TV movie called Lonesome Dove, and then ended up getting cast as a stunt woman for like Ricky Schroeder and Diane Lane. And I was five. And we lived in Del Rio, Texas. My dad was in the military. And I had my first experience on a set. And it was like a circus. It was like interesting people that were eccentric, that didn't like live in one place ever. They were like nomads, which I was kind of used to anyway because I was in the military. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like, oh, this is cool. All these like freaks and weirdos are like me. And I felt like a camaraderie or something. And I was five, mind you, with that lifestyle. And I was like, I want to do that. An opportunity came up when I was 11 for me to get acting classes and get a headshot and audition in front of agents. And if you can get an agent, then you can interview for TV shows or movies or commercials, and if you can book one of those, then that's how you do it. I mean, it just seemed very simple to me if I could only get an agent.
So at 11, it seemed, you're like, I just need an agent, and then everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, and so then I went to there's this radio station called Kiss FM, and they advertised for this, like, acting Beverly Hills Studios, I think it was called. So my mom and my aunt, my mom was, I'm a young mom, mind you. So my mom had me at 19. So my mom and my aunt's four kids and my brother and my aunt's sister and her boyfriend, we all pile in one car. It was something like a Buick Regal. And it was a hand-me-down car from my grandparents. And we went to the Hilton Hotel next to the LAX. And we auditioned. And there were well over 1,000 people who auditioned for these acting lessons and headshots that you could get if you win the grand prize. And then you get to audition in front of agents. And out of more than, you know, I think it was like 1,500 or 2,000 people, I won the grand prize. Meanwhile, I was painfully shy.
Even when you were on stage or in front of people? Or was that like
if
you were
I could
shy
play,
in real life?
I was shy in real life, but if I could play a character that wasn't me. So then I was like, I'm going to go on stage and pretend like I'm confident.
So you just like Sasha Fierced it?
Yeah, I did.
As an 11-year-old.
As an 11-year-old, and I won the thing. But when I was 11, we had a Ford Probe. We were living paycheck to paycheck, and my mom had various jobs. She'd been a bartender. She worked at a movie theater. And my dad was starting a real estate company. And so we didn't have money to do this. So I would, like, go into the couch and find change to pay for gas money to get us to L.A. And then we would be out there all day because I would take all the acting lessons. I try to fit them all in my summer. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be a year's worth of acting lessons, and I fit them into one summer so I can get the program done. And I did. And I got my first agent, and I booked my first job a couple months after that. And I got my first job was Kissing Girl Number 2. What's her name? And the director kept me on and gave me 3 lines, so I got my SAG card.
Wow.
And that's pretty much how it happened.
So where did you get that hustle and that drive from?
You know, I think, well, my mom is a hustler and my dad is a hard worker. And I think I got probably the best of both of them. My grandmother, who also helped raise me, her ability to MacGyver. I don't know. I just willed things to happen. Mm-hmm. I just felt like when you start solo and no one kind of believes that you can do anything and the odds are against you, there's really no place for you to go but up, and there's kind of nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. So you get a little bit of that fearlessness. And I came from nothing, and I had no family that was in the business, and I really had no reason for it to work. And people kept telling me, even when I was starting out, like, you are the antithesis of what people want out of a child actor, because they want someone who I was emo. I was not, you know, a typical child actor. They usually look 5 years younger than their age. I looked older, so screw that one up. And I was super emo, so I was never booking anything. You know, they want you to be smiley and happy and all of that. And I was always kind of like moody and weird. And so then I played a lot of, I would say, sexually precocious characters. And I was very prude and very nervous about all of that. Mm-hmm. And boys, and I was so awkward. But I kept getting roles where, like, I played, like, the sexy girl in the thing, or very, you know, the pregnant teen who gives up her baby to Kelly on 90210. It was weird because then I kept playing these characters that were so not me. And then when I was 17, when I was 16, I graduated early and I decided, you know, it's hard to be a struggling actress. And because my parents struggled financially when I was growing up, when I was younger, I didn't want to live paycheck to paycheck. So I was like, I'm either going to be a successful actress or I'm going to go to school like everyone else and get a degree so I can get a good job. So when I graduated early, when I was 16, and then gave myself those 2 years, so at least I'd be the same age as everyone.
Right, okay, got it.
Who's going into college.
Freshman year, yeah.
Yeah. In that time period, I got Dark Angel. And I just prayed a lot about it. And, you know, I do have a spiritual connection. And I just felt like, hey, if this is my path, then it's going to happen. And that felt like the widest door opening and the biggest sign for me that maybe I could really do this for a living.
So you were probably, I'm guessing, the youngest person on set.
Oh, yeah.
So what was it like?
And I was the star. And Jim would say, Ace, the bets are not in your favor. Everyone thinks that you're going to have your ass handed to you. It's a grueling schedule. I mean, I was working 86-hour weeks on the regular. And then, yeah. And then on the weekends, I would fly down to L.A. and do all of the PR and marketing. It was the hardest thing I'd ever done. But
is that like boot camp?
It's boot camp for discipline. I was prepared, though, man. I mean, after that.
You said you wanted a shot.
Yeah, I can hit a mark. I know my lines. I'm professional. No one's ever accused me.
Did you know any of that stuff going in, really?
Like, I had no idea what this type of stuff. I mean, I had acted before because I did different things, but nothing like the star of a TV show that James Cameron, you know, created for Fox. Like that was a big deal. And it was a 1-hour drama, action, sci-fi drama. It was very ambitious. And I grew up pretty quickly.
So what kind of skills were you honing aside from the acting skills? I mean, you're having to learn to be your own advocate, I'm imagining.
Yeah. You know, being as young as I was and a woman, people certainly try to placate you. I was such a hard ass, though. I probably overcompensated, and I have such a thick skin that I was probably pretty abrupt. And my personality is pretty abrupt. I'm black and white. There's not a lot of gray. I call it for what it is.
You see through the bullshit also.
I see through the bullshit, and I'm not like an emotional creature. And it could come off as abrupt and aggressive and tough. Mm-hmm. But if
things that probably would have never been attributed to you if you were a man, P.S.
never have been attributed to me if I was a man. In fact, if I was a man, they would be like, oh, he's smart. He's a boss. He's going to be somebody, you know.
But you're an 18-year-old girl.
I was an 18-year-old girl. And I had high standards. And I was like, if I'm busting my ass here every single day, there's no room for fuckery. And if I saw it, I would call it out. I was just so focused for so long at such a young age. I created habits and I was so serious.
Almost like having blinders.
Yeah. And it's hard to be joyful and in the moment because you're vulnerable and you start having emotions. And not that there's anything wrong with it, but I think I was just so afraid of getting hurt. For whatever reason,
You want it to be controlled because P.S. that makes sense when you are the youngest person and a woman and all eyes are on you, mm-hmm. and everything is resting on your shoulders.
And everyone thinks that I'm gonna crack and fail. Yeah,
I mean, you have to create defenses for yourself, mm-hmm. and sort of like that callus and that barrier. So, did you think of yourself as a brand at that point? Because I think now actresses, people, the world.
I was probably one of the first at the time that thought of myself as a brand.
So like did you have
meetings?
Meetings and a big picture idea of like, mm-hmm. okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this. Because I think that also back in the day, it was very difficult for actresses to do anything besides act. It was very much like stay in your lane.
Right.
Like, we don't want to hear from you on anything mm-hmm. else. And it was all this, like, it was, you were put in a box.
Mm-hmm. But not just in a box professionally in that sense, but also in a box and who they even think you are allowed to be
portray
as an actress. And so I felt the confines of, you're only playing tough, badass sci-fi girls or chicks, and that's you. So I was like,
I don't want that to be my brand.
No,
I want my brand to be bigger.
I was like, I'm doing this because I feel like girls like me are underrepresented as leading ladies, and we can be tough, we can be sassy, we can hold our own, and we don't have blonde hair and blue eyes. Mm-hmm. We're not fair skinned. So I just felt like there were there's so many women out there who just felt really underrepresented in entertainment and in pop culture. It wasn't the norm that women of color certainly got to also be leading ladies. And so I always loved Flashdance. I always wanted to dance. And my parents couldn't afford, you know, for me to take real lessons. And so I did this movie called Honey.
Which is a cult classic.
That was cool because it was completely the antithesis of a sci-fi, hardcore fanboy girl. And the movie did well. And so that was cool. And then...
And was this part of your sort
that,
of big
that
picture
That was part
plan,
of my like... strategy. Yeah, I sat down with my manager and I was like, I don't want to be pigeonholed. I also know at the time it was like you have to be likable to be able to be one of the leading ladies that can put asses in seats that can get the studios to care about you. So I knew I had to be likable, and I knew comedy was also part of that likability.
Mm-hmm.
Or else you're just playing these, like, stoic, badass women, which are great.
Which is a hell of a lot better than just, like, the girlfriend.
It's true.
it's
was
a little more empowering.
I really was adamant in not playing the girlfriend. I needed global, so I made sure that all my stuff was globally distributed, whether it was, you know, TV or film. And
that's very clever.
And I went to the territories. So I would go to Germany and I would go to Japan.
To promote
and the UK and build up the fan base and make sure that I always stayed relevant in those territories.
So you really thought about your acting career from a very businesslike point of view.
Yeah. I said to my manager at the time, I was like, why aren't women given the same opportunities as men? And he's like, it's all about box office. It's a business. And I was like, well, I'm going to treat myself like a business then.
So the business plan was to...
Global. And
leads.
Try and do as many different types of genres. And then I told my stylist, I don't want to be the person on the red carpet that is desperate. I just want to look... chic and classy. I think the combination of showing up and being pulled together and not being a hot mess. And I also would never allow myself to get photographed when I was at a club.
Wise.
I was very cognizant of that. And these were the days when, like...
Yeah, that happened a lot.
You know, Paris and Britney were hanging out, not wearing undies. Like, these were those days. And I was like...
The good old days.
And I was going to the club, but I would go in the back door. I would wear the baggy clothes.
You were crafty.
I was very crafty, yes.
Because it wasn't on brand.
It wasn't on brand.
But you still had to live your life.
But I still had to live my best life. And, you know, I love to dance. And so, yeah, that was the thing.
It's interesting because I think, like, to really look at your career as, like, you spent the first half, like, when you were just acting, as opposed to acting plus, building a brand.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that you were your first company.
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
Because you were thinking about all of the things that you have to think of when you're building a brand mm-hmm. as a business that's not a person.
And I was just building I felt like I needed to build myself as a business so that studios can bank on me.
Yeah.
You know, and feel comfortable doing that.
So to transition a little bit, I would imagine that in the acting world, you hear no a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that...
Oh, yeah. For every yes, there's like a million no's.
And that sucks. But mm-hmm. also is probably this really incredible boot camp for building a thicker skin. Mm. Where, you know, I think a lot of times with women, they hear no and they stop.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas no is just when no is on the reg, then it doesn't bother you in the same way because you know it just means no for now or no this time or like no but keep going. So mm-hmm. do you think that that helped when you were starting to build the Honest Company and putting together a business plan and taking it out and pitching it to people? Well, first of all, I'm just assuming things. Were the VCs receptive immediately? Was everyone who you pitched the idea to
receptive?
No,
I didn't even know to even go to VCs, frankly, when I came up with the idea.
How did you come up with the idea? Let's start there. How did you come up with the idea?
I came up with the idea because I got pregnant when I was 26, and it was not planned. But it was a pleasant surprise. And I was like, I got this. I'm excited, scared, terrified. What the hell is happening? So I reached out to my mom and I asked her, you know, what should I do? I was like, why are there different products for babies versus adults? Like, why can't we use the same stuff? I'm so confused. And she's like, because, you know, it's just, it's gentler and softer and da-da-da-da. So I used a laundry detergent that she recommended. And so then I got an allergic reaction to this laundry detergent my mom told me I had to use that is for babies. And I was like, what the hell? And I called my mom and I was like super pregnant. And she's like, you're just hormonal and you're allergic to everything. And I was just like, that's not a thing, mom. Like, what if my baby was allergic? How dare you? And how could you recommend this? And I did research and I'm a bit of a research person. I love going down any rabbit hole. I found this website called Healthy Child, Healthy World. And it sort of became my encyclopedia for what do I have to look out for? How can I safeguard this little person that I'm bringing into this world? Because I rewind to the beginning of this podcast. When I was a child, I was so sick. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't want to have a child that was sick like me and having constant asthma attacks and can't breathe. I mean, it's very suffocating, literally, mm-hmm. To not know when you're going to have an asthma attack and you're just like playing in grass on the soccer field or you're, you know, eating an orange and your throat closes. It's just like a terrible thing to have to go through. Every cold turns into bronchitis or pneumonia. I mean, it's just like awful. So I was like, I can't have a sick baby. And that's where the idea came from for to build a company, because I felt like, you know, I reached out to the CEO of Healthy Child, Healthy World, and I was like, well, you know, what do I buy? I'm, you know, you're,
it's so confusing.
It's just so confusing. And there's so many different brands. And is vegan, like, that doesn't mean it's healthier, right? It just means it's not using animal byproducts, but it could still be using certain chemicals, okay? Then if it's dermatologically tested, that also doesn't really mean much, because that just means that you can pay to get something dermatologically tested. Doesn't necessarily mean it's a safer or better for you thing. So I'm just confused about what to buy. And when I'm looking at all of this data and the rise of certain chemicals that have been brought into everyday CPG products and the rise of illnesses that are caused by the environment, they really go hand in hand. And I saw this parallel chart. Yeah. So I was like, I just want a healthy kid, and it's too hard to shop around this. There's got to be one company that I can just outsource my trust that makes safe products that actually work. Because I also felt like the alternative products, when I was making them with baking soda and vinegar at home with essential oils, it just wasn't cleaning.
Yeah.
Just wasn't really working. Or it would, my house would smell like, you know,
vinegar.
And salad dressing, and Cash would be like, what are you doing? I felt like I was constantly compromising. And then the aesthetics, it's like I felt like I had to turn into a hippie. Mm-hmm. That doesn't shave, which is fine for people who are hippies that don't shave. It just wasn't me. Mm-hmm. I really just need stuff that's going to work.
Yeah.
Where I don't have to, like, think twice, and that is beautifully designed and fits into my day-to-day. And just, you know, is safe and just knowing that I can trust it. And so that's where the idea of the Honest Company, that's why I called it the Honest Company. I also felt like my celebrity would hurt the company, because I feel like a celebrity is so fleeting. And I was never confused, like, oh, I'm this big star and I'm such a, so great. I always felt like, oh my God, when they figure me out, I'm going to get kicked out of here.
Some, like, imposter syndrome, my dear?
Oh, yeah. Major imposter syndrome. When I was, like, presenting at any award show, especially the Oscars or the Golden Globes, I'm like, oh, God. Once they figure me out, they're going to be like, mistake inviting this girl in here. And so I you know, I just never really cared that much about it. And I always, like I said, I always looked at my career as an actress more as a business than mm-hmm. anything else. And I didn't think that I was that special. And I didn't believe the hype. And so I was like, I want to create a company that can transcend that and it stands for something. And my daughter's name is Honor. And Honor inspired me to create the company. And so that's where the name Honest came from.
Were you concerned at all about, A, if people would take the company seriously because of your work, mm-hmm. and B, if the company would affect your ability to work in the entertainment industry?
Yeah, so I sort of put the entertainment industry on the back burner, and I sort of just went 100 into this business. Because
was that scary?
You know, it felt like a social justice issue.
It felt like a calling.
Yeah, I went and lobbied on Capitol Hill for chemical reform, and I felt like no matter, and this is a nonpartisan issue. This is not if you are red or blue, you're going to think this versus that. Nobody wants to get sick. Nobody wants to expose their children or themselves to something that could lead to them being sick. Everybody wants their health. So if you could eliminate the risks by just testing chemicals for safety prior to them being put into a product at that amount that you plan to put them in a product, that just is a common sense thing that you should do. And in fact, they do it in Europe.
Yeah.
And that's just something that we couldn't get past. And I was like, looking at the options, you know, I could afford to go to Whole Foods or, you know, various other places that have these. And I'm also living in a city and I have access to a lot of stuff, but not everyone does. And so, you know, just the whole, like, you had to live in a certain tax bracket to even have access to better for you products just seemed so unfair. So it became a social justice issue. And I was like, you know, my parents in the military should have been able to provide a healthy and safe environment for me, regardless of how much they made at that time. And you shouldn't have to be in the top, you know, a top tax bracket in order to do that. So that's...
It should be baseline.
It should be baseline, and it should be available and accessible. And so... I had that in mind when I started the company as well. And, you know, you have to pay a little bit of a premium, to be frank. And I learned that in creating products, because alternative ingredients are more expensive. Why? Because they're less used. Mm-hmm. And so you can't buy them in bulk and they're not as cheap. Mm-hmm. And so it costs more to make a better for you product with alternative ingredients. It just does. So in order to make money and have a business with a margin profile that makes sense to investors, you have to charge a little bit more. Now, it shouldn't be double.
Right.
It shouldn't be triple. But there's a 15 to 20% over conventional pricing that it's probably going to have to be.
Yeah.
Just because that's the economics. Until everyone is using
the standard.
Until everyone's using an alternative, it's just unfortunately just costs more to buy those raw materials. But
so when you're starting creating the company, mm-hmm. You're building this brand, mm-hmm. were you actively using all of these skills that you had learned in, like, building your own career?
Yeah, I always had common sense. A lot of it is common sense.
We talk about this a lot on this podcast, how much common sense is underrated.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most important thing.
It's the most important thing.
The common sense from your acting career.
The common sense I learned, growing up from my acting career, and then...
The hustle
and drive to not give up. Surround myself with people who are experts in areas that I'm not, and not have an ego. You know, I know that I'm not an environmental health scientist. And I know...
But you could play one.
I can play one. And I know what I don't know. Yeah. So I recruited the CEO of Healthy Child, Healthy World to join me in this venture. He literally wrote a book about the link to certain toxic chemicals that are found in ingredients that are in everyday products to adverse effects on your health. He literally wrote that book. So I was like, that's a great person to join me in this venture, because that is something that I can never be. And I want that to be legitimate and that side of it to be legitimate. And then on the other hand, I'd never built a business model. I didn't even know where to start. A deck? Are you kidding me? Like, the closest thing I've ever done to a deck is like a collage of ideas with some pictures. So I basically just kept putting together folders with collages. They were like mini collages with the idea. It was like, I want this brand to stand for this. I want it to
like
look and feel.
Boards.
It's a vision board in folders, which I called a deck. And I also got on social media because I did some market research on my brand as an actress, and I definitely veered more men. My core audience was like 15 to 35 for men. And then I had the 18 to 35-year-old women, but it was like 30% of my audience and 70% were the dudes. So I knew I needed to change those demos in order to get into people's homes and to be looked at as a trusted person in CPG or building a lifestyle brand. Really, it was really around this lifestyle, this healthy lifestyle. So I got on Twitter.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember sitting and talking with you about that, and you had a moment where it was petrifying because you had maintained such control and compartmentalized how the public saw you and interacted with you. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden you were just basically like lifting up this gate and it was going to be this unfiltered you. And I remember you having a moment of like you were excited, but it was also this crazy terrifying thing.
I think it
to
was
to put yourself out there like that.
Yeah.
Just you, not you as a role, but you as you.
Me as me. And I think what was liberating and terrifying is that you feel so vulnerable and exposed. At the same time, I felt in a weird way more vulnerable and exposed when other people would write about me and portray me in a way that wasn't me. Mm-hmm. And I would read articles and I would cry, and my parents wouldn't talk to me for a week because of the way that something came across. And it was just every article was like hurtful to my family because everyone wanted to. And the way that I talked about it, and I didn't know the way the journalist was going to twist it or twist the story and make it come off like this or that. And so
you wanted to control the narrative.
I was just also so frustrated with the way that people portrayed me because it just wasn't me. So I think being on social media was opening myself up to the unknown as well.
That's a good risk to take. What do you look for when you're hiring? Like, what's important to you as part of it? Like, is it gut? Do you think that you have a better read on people in part because of your background?
It's gut, common sense.
Oh, there it is again.
And their experience. You know, someone lived through 10 or 15 years of this career and this job. They know it inside and out. And so I'm there to learn from them, if anything. And what people don't know is, like, the idea of Honest, you know, the little seedlings of the idea came 3 years prior to me actually launching the company, which was 6 years ago. So I had the idea, and I couldn't figure out how to crack it for 3 years.
What made you keep going?
I think it really was the social injustice piece. It really was like, okay, if this is my purpose— if this is why I was given this platform, you know, as an actress and the success as an actress, if it's to do good, this is what where my heart was pulling me and where my head was pulling me. And it just felt like it had to be done. And I wanted to give up a lot, especially as people told me there was no way and it was too complicated and it was too hard. And how dare I mean, to build a lifestyle brand that makes CPG products is really ambitious.
Yeah.
Really ambitious.
Yeah, especially when someone does not have that background.
Yeah, and I launched with 17 products and we have thousands now, you know. And from the supply chain and the operations to the innovation and research and development of making the products to the marketing and distribution. Like, it's all complicated.
Yeah.
Every piece of it is complicated, and you just have to be buttoned up. It's a mix of luck and hustle and drive and ambition.
And that calling.
And that calling, yeah.
Because there has to be something that sustains you when you're in your darkest moments. And that's when I think, like, I'm not
so
a religious person in any way, but I do believe in energy and power and mm-hmm. something greater than us and
mm-hmm.
and that feeling of, like, needing to be connected to something.
Totally. Yeah, it felt like my calling in both circumstances. And then so back to acting.
And I just thought you're just shooting a pilot.
Yeah.
Like, you've been acting this whole way through.
Ish. I kind of really put it on the back burner. And I really did only, for the most part.
Well, you're also having a family at the same
time.
Yeah,
I have. Oh, that.
But so you put it on the back burner unless it was, I'm assuming, something that, like, really spoke to you or thought felt different or fun or.
It really was more favors.
Ah, interesting.
I had friends that were like,
that's honest.
Will you do this? And I was like, how many days will it take?
So then why did you just shoot a pilot?
You know, I really feel like Nick has the business really on a path that, and I've been in lockstep with him and, you know, where we're going and where what the path forward is. And so I feel like they can run it and I could advise and be here. And I still very much.
You're hugely involved.
I am still very, very involved. I was micromanaging, though. I was in the weeds in every department. And I know I was annoying myself. And I'm like, these people have degrees and I'm questioning this and that. And I'm asking for more efficiency and all these things. And I just needed a break. It's just so hard. It's so hard to be in an environment where you're learning, but you're also the boss and your decisions matter. And so I think just for my mental state to stay sane, I needed to step back a little bit and reconnect with my joy.
Yeah.
And you know, where I do feel like honest is why I was put here. To create this company that stands for what it stands for, I feel like my heart is still as a performer. And I was denying myself that for so long, and I didn't have the space for it. And I feel like I now have the space for it.
So for all the women out there who are thinking about making a career change in some way, or sort of the way I think of your career is more like a career evolution, because you've been able to maintain and do different things and expand in different ways.
Yeah, I mean,
What advice would you give people?
I think the advice is I don't know if it has to be scary and absolute. I don't think you have to give up one to do the other. You figure out when it's time to put more of an emphasis on one thing versus another.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll know when that time comes. And so I think we do live in a time and a space where side hustles are the norm. And
true that.
And you are allowed to evolve as a person. And I think you only have this one life, and good Lord, it's short. It really is. And no one knows how your life is going to go. And so if you kind of live with this notion that you got nothing to lose, why not just try it? And I think you owe it to yourself to just try it. And you don't have to give up everything that's comfortable and that you know. I think there's always a way to figure out how to dip your toe in it until you know it's safe enough to go in full speed ahead. And if you don't have the right people around you that support you, you're going to have to make tough choices. Because I think that is the thing that got me through the 3 years of rejection with the company and starting from scratch and starting something new, especially as an adult and as someone that felt somewhat accomplished. You need to have someone who has your back that can be sort of that anchor, that sounding board, because it's going to be tough and you need to have someone who really is genuinely there for you.
You're right. It's to have someone, whoever it is, whether it's a business partner or, you know, I have my oldest friend has been my best friend since I was 5. And, you know, we don't talk every day, but the fact that when I need her, I can call her and vent about all of that stuff is really mm-hmm. nice.
Yeah. So I think it's not.
You need support.
I think you need to have some. You need to have support. And you need to have someone if you don't have more than one to kind of to lean on. And you owe it to yourself to do it.
I mean, color me inspired.
That was actress and founder of The Honest Company, Jessica Alba. Thank you guys for listening to this episode of Second Life. For more interviews with inspiring women like Jessica, head over to mydomain.com, where we have so many more stories for you to peruse. As always, I'm interested in who you'd like to hear from on the show, so send in your request to secondlife@mydomain.com, or you can just DM me on Instagram @HillaryKerr. If you like today's show, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to rate us and review us and screenshot us and tag us in your stories, that would be awesome. No one would be mad about that, least of all me. I'm Hillary Kerr, and you've been listening to Second Life by MyDomain.com.